This is special programming from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. It's been 18 weeks since the campfire started. Tonight, on After Paradise, we hear about a new case management program in Butte County to help campfire survivors get connected to resources they still need 4 months after the fire. We hear from two women who have returned to Paradise and are now living in a town of rubble with few other people in it. And we go to Magalia with the Butte County Fire Safe Council to learn how they are working to prevent fires in the future. If you have a question about post-campfire recovery, you can ask it at mynspr.org. For Thursday, March 14th, 2019, this is After Paradise. More than 4 months after the campfire, resources that were immediately available almost seem gone now. Volunteers are few, donations have slowed, shelters have been shuttered, the disaster recovery centers are gone. But there is help out there if you need it. That's the bottom line. Last week, Butte County announced a new program for campfire survivors to help them find whatever resources they need. The assistance is provided by 20 caseworkers who were sent from the California Children and Families Commission. To learn more, North State Public Radio's Mark Albert talked with Butte County Public Information Officer Casey Hatcher about the new program.
We're really talking about working with people on a case-by-case basis to help advocate for them and walk them through what their recovery plan is going to look like. And so we're working with individuals who have unmet needs. So maybe they are still in need of housing, or potentially they have a mental health need, or maybe they need clothing or transportation, something like this. So these case managers are really there to work with them, to walk them through the process, and to connect them to resources that may be available.
What are some of the other services that they offer or can refer one to?
So there's a number of different referrals that they're making out. So there may be people who have a need for food. So whether that is a connection into Employment and Social Services for a CalFresh referral, or maybe directly to a food bank or something of that nature. There might be people who have questions that persist about their insurance or maybe a rental arrangement. So they need legal services. There are needs in general for the things that people lost in their homes when they burned, so furniture and appliances and household goods, so connecting them to those types of things.
Give me an example. If someone is still without housing or still without interim housing, how do they help?
The housing need may be a little bit different for everyone. So it might be something as simple as helping them identify where they could put an RV that they maybe already have. So maybe they need to be connected with a property owner that could let them place their RV on a property. Maybe they need assistance helping understand how they transfer their affordable housing voucher to another community. Maybe they need to have assistance hauling an RV somewhere, or maybe they are affected because they had to move off their property where there's debris, and so they get connected with the county and are in a temporary RV park.
So someone has a list of, I have an RV and there's a spot available for me in Corning. They call this case management service and they'll be connected with someone who'll just tow their vehicle there because they're a good Samaritan.
Well, I think we all know that there's a housing shortage, and so a big part of the unmet needs for housing, particularly in Butte County, but even in closely surrounding communities, is a lack of places to go. We are having to be more creative with those connections. So yeah, to some extent, there are community-based organizations or Good Samaritans who are helping to provide some of those solutions. There's also public assistance that's available. So some of the housing solution is helping people reconnect with FEMA. Maybe people were ineligible for FEMA services, but they needed to provide some additional documentation or information and need some assistance with that.
What about something like mental health?
Well, we actually have seen so far from the folks that have come in for the case management services, the two primary needs that they've had are housing and behavioral health. And that might mean, again, a little something different for everyone. But that could be a referral to Butte County Behavioral Health. It might even be a referral to some of the services that are available specifically because of the campfire. So Kaiser Permanente is providing counseling services starting in February. They started February 20th through May, free of charge for campfire survivors. And they can have one-on-one counseling sessions. You can call in. There's information at buttecountyrecovers.org if you click on the health tab for the number to call for that. There's California Hope, who has counselors. So there's lots of different avenues to connect people to. And these case managers really become that point of connection.
It's primarily housing and mental health.
In addition to that, I think we've heard quite a bit that navigating FEMA assistance feels complicated for people. And these case managers can help them understand maybe they have been determined ineligible and need to provide additional information or simply need an advocate in that process. Employment, their employment needs, absolutely. And there can be connections made for that through the Alliance for Workforce Development, who can work with displaced workers, works with businesses who are trying to recruit. They're really connecting people not only with public resources that are available, but those that are provided by local organizations, community-based organizations. They call it unmet needs. I think that's kind of a word that's used for it. But it's really at this point, what do you still have going on that you haven't been able to get met? And what can we do to help with that? So this is that connection. To access the immediate disaster case management, people have two ways to do that. You can call 211 and be connected with a case manager. You don't have to come physically into a location. In fact, the case managers can come to you, so they can be mobile. Or you can go to the Butte County Employment Center on Carmichael Drive, and those hours are 8 to 5.
That was Butte County Public Information Officer Casey Hatcher. What is it like to live in paradise today, with no neighbors or town and pretty much alone? We're going to hear from two women whose homes are still standing and who have returned to the Ridge to see how they're coping and learn more about their day-to-day. We start with Peggy Beltran, who grew up in paradise and returned just weeks after the fire. Before her town was destroyed, she says she worked as a respiratory therapist at Feather River Hospital.
For a while, it was really hard to get up. It's hard to get out of bed. I just wanted to stay there. It would have been really easy just to stay like that. So I went back to work. I'd worked it right out in Marysville. It's an Adventist hospital now, but I'd worked there for 12 years. They were good enough to take me back, and I really appreciate that. And there's some awesome people there too, you know, so that's good. I know it's hard for a lot of us because we just really miss our work family. So now you have to establish those connections again, and it was ripped from you. The people I took care of as a respiratory therapist, they're gone. They left. Some days it just hits me, like, I'll be fine for a while, and then it just hits me, and I'm just so sad, and I just get weepy. Did that at work last week. I ran into some coworkers from, it just was a weepy day. So you just try to get through it. At first, when I just was homeless with no job, right after the fire, I have a couple of friends that were so supportive. Two of my coworkers that live in Chico were really supportive, and I owe a lot to them for being there for me. Penny and Joanne, thank you. Chico's been great, too. All of a sudden, they had all these people from Paradise clogging up their roads, any spare housing. And they've been really amazing. I'm so grateful for them, so supportive, and just really, like, just the love they have is much appreciated. There's nothing in paradise. I mean, there is stuff now. If you go just that way, I'm used to driving up Neal to Wayland. There's some destruction there. I see it a lot. When I go into town, it just breaks my heart because I'm not looking at that every day. And you look out my canyon, there's burn spots. But the rain came. There's so much green. It's so pretty right now. So it's easy to kind of put it in the back of your mind, and then, but then there'll be a reminder. We still don't have internet. I'm hoping we can get some internet, but we still have our house, which I'm grateful for. For a while, though, you know, I remember my husband once said it would have been easier if our house just would have burned down. And it would have been. You know, the insurance wasn't really... I mean, they eventually came through, but at first we weren't hearing a lot. And we're here with my elderly parents, and my dad needs oxygen at night, and we don't have any power. So we had to just live like we're camping. It's better now. You know, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what to say to people who lost their homes and I still have mine. I feel so bad for them. I feel like it isn't like this happened to you and this happened to me. I feel like we were all in it together. And the feeling I get whenever I talk to anyone from Paradise that went through it, I don't feel any like judgment or envy or anything like that. Or like, I think we all just feel like we're part of something special and it's gone. I've heard estimates of like what it's going to cost to build. It's going to be a more expensive place to live once it's rebuilt. I see the whole the demographic changing significantly. Eventually we probably will sell and leave, but for right now I want to help rebuild. And we have our lavender farm. We just started a lavender farm this last year. A lot of our plants made it. I've been perfecting my lotions. We got our bath bomb press in the mail recently. So we're still going to do that. I wouldn't mind having a little shop in Paradise. It's hard to talk about. Like, we almost died. It feels like it was a bad dream or something. Like, when I think about it, it's like, did that really happen? And it did. I'll go into town. I'm like, yeah, it really happened. Like, so much is gone. One thing I've noticed about myself since the fire, like sometimes I just don't want to be in a crowded room or just around crowds. I mean, just all these people trying to get out, just cars, and it just... So I guess it's affecting me in ways I don't know. Yeah, I haven't even recognized everything in myself. Sometimes I'm shorter tempered than I would have been before the fire. Other times I have more patience because, you know, like, okay, this isn't that bad. I've been through some bad things and this isn't that bad.
That was Paradise resident Peggy Beltran. You're listening to After Paradise, a special production from North State Public Radio. More just ahead. This is After Paradise, a special program on the aftermath of the campfire from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. What is it like to live in Paradise 4 months after the campfire? That's the question we're exploring from two women who did not lose their homes in the fire and who have now returned to the Ridge. Reporter Ashley Bailey visited one of these women and her family this week to find out what their day-to-day life is like and how they're getting by.
Emily Holtum is a stay-at-home mom and owns one of the rare houses in Paradise that is still standing after the campfire.
Hi, you must be Emily.
Oh, my dog, sorry.
She will calm down after a second.
All right,
This affectionate golden doodle puppy named Hazel is new to Paradise, and so are Emily, her husband Spencer, and their kids.
I have 6 kids. My oldest is in college, and then I have an 18-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 3-year-old.
The Holtums moved here just about 9 months ago from Southern California for Spencer's job. He's the superintendent at Oroville City Elementary School District. That's a big life event for any family. And then the fire happened. Emily says one of her kids is having a hard time sleeping and sometimes lays on the floor of her bedroom because they're scared there's going to be another fire.
And my 3-year-old daughter is very clingy. If I go to the other room, she gets worried. She got worried when you came to the door. You know, she ran and hid in the bedroom, where she used to not be like that. She used to be a little more outgoing, but now she's very clingy and very worried all the time. And when she plays with her dolls, she talks about, you know, she'll say, "My mom's house burned down. Did your mom's house burn down?" And talks, when we go through town, she talks about the same thing, saying, "My house burnt down, that house burnt down." Not normal things that 3-year-olds should talk about.
Worrying about her kids is one reason Emily has mixed emotions about staying in Paradise. She and her family were able to return home a few days before Christmas. All their utilities are up and running again, so she feels lucky for that. But it's clear that she's hurting. She's still adjusting to a new community, and it's difficult to talk with her new friends in Paradise, some of who are living in trailers, about what she's going through.
I have a house, and they don't, so I have to be careful, I feel like, about what I say and what I don't say, because I'm in a pretty good situation where they really are not. And a lot of them have lived here their whole life, and now they're moving away.
Emily knows she and her family need to stay put for now, but thinking about the future is a huge unknown.
I'll think I'm doing great, and then we're all doing better. And then the next day, I'm like in this huge slump again, and I'm having a breakdown thinking, what are we really doing here? What is happening with this crazy life of ours?
She says her kids are the same way. One of her high schoolers broke out into tears in the car the other day. It's been hard to move to a new place and make new friends and then watch them move away.
And if my daughter were here, all of our blinds would be closed because she really does not like them being open.
Along with keeping the blinds closed at home, another big physical change in Emily's life is all of the driving she does every day.
You know, I'd go 5 minutes to pick up my kids from school. And we'd stop at the park and play on the way home, and we'd have a great time, and we'd be gone for 45 minutes and come home and make dinner, and we'd be great. Today, it will take me 1.5 hours to go pick up kids.
Emily hops in the car to go pick up 2 of her kids from school with her 3-year-old Charlotte in tow.
Mom.
What?
You buy a purple car.
Do you think I should buy a purple car?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we'll get a purple car someday.
Thank you, Mom.
You're welcome, Charlotte.
First, the girls go and pick up 9-year-old Quentin, who rides the bus from Oroville and gets dropped off at the fairgrounds.
This is Quentin.
Hi, Quentin.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Then the Holtums are off to the old Orchard Supply hardware store that's been converted into the Paradise Intermediate School to pick up 13-year-old Everett.
So this is Everett. Everett, this is Ashley.
Hi, Everett. Nice to meet you.
Just picking up these 2 kids round trip took 1 hour. And this isn't the only trip to Chico that Emily will likely make today. She's back at home for a little while before she has to take her kids to sports practices or run an errand, which almost always involves her going back down to Chico. Emily says she avoids going up Skyway to shop at some of the scattered businesses that have reopened in Paradise because it's too painful to see all the twisted metal and rubble.
I should be more supportive of our town, and it's my goal is that I'm going to be more supportive, but it's really so depressing to go into town. You'd think that it'd get easier as you drive through Paradise, but it doesn't. Every time I drive through, it's like heart-wrenching again. It's not ever any easier. I know that especially the first few times we drove through it, we cried, and it was hard to see. And I think now we more hold our breath, but I don't know. Every time it's just depressing. I come home and I just feel like sick inside. It's not ever any easier.
Emily says she has not sought out help for her mental health. But as a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, she has been leaning on her faith when she struggles.
Through just prayer. I have a strong testimony of my Savior, and I know He's helping me through this.
When you ask Emily what kind of support she needs going forward, She says she feels like there's not a lot people can do, but reaching out and listening or just talking with her does help.
We've had letters that have come from Japan and Chile and from all over. I mean, it's just been crazy. They've just said, you know, you can get through this. There's been people that have been through other areas that have had fires and things too, and said, hey, you know, we've been through it before too. We know, we understand on a smaller scale, but they understand how hard it is. And it's made me want to be a different person the next time there's a disaster somewhere. I am going to be there writing letters or doing things for those people that I had in the past just always thought, well, somebody else will do it. I don't think I ever thought about writing a letter or doing something like that before. And I am definitely going to be a different person now.
For North State Public Radio, I'm Ashley Bailey.
While the number of people living in Paradise is few, there are many people working in the town and the communities that surround it. Much of the work involves trees. All over Paradise and Magalia, trees are being downed and chipped into mulch. Many of these dead trees are in danger of falling. Some are trees in the way of future power lines, but many are in unburned areas of the ridge. They're being downed by local organizations in order to lessen the severity of the next fire. Independent producer Matt Fidler has the story.
These are sounds of a forest thinning operation around the Paradise Pines Property Owners Association in Magalia, chipping up woody material removed from the forest and left on the ground as mulch. The goal is to return the forest condition to one that more resembles the forest that John Bidwell knew.
I like John Bidwell, you know, and one of the things that I've read about him is that he rode his horse from Chico all the way over to the coast, to Manchester, I think it is, and he rode his horse there, from Chico over there, and you think about doing that now, and it's like, there's no way someone
over the Mendocino Forest, basically.
Exactly.
That's Jim Heltman. He's a former firefighter and now helps manage forest thinning projects for the Butte County Fire Safe Council. Jim drove me all around Magalia, sometimes getting rained on, showing me forest thinning projects with his colleague, Callie Jane DeAnza, who is director of the Butte County Fire Safe Council.
We are trying to manage this forest. We're trying to set it up for survival, and it does require us to take some trees out.
I asked Callie Jane and Jim to show me some of the council's projects around the ridge, to explain how they're done, and most importantly, why this is important to do in a fire-prone area like Magalia.
We did a forest management plan for the community of Magalia last summer and found that the forest was about 150% overgrown. Basically, you want to be able to move through the forest just the way the fire would, so that you are acting in that capacity of, you, if you can touch a tree, then the fire would burn from one tree to the next. We want to break up that space so that there's a room for fire to come through and not ignite one tree to the next. So one analogy is, if you can ride through the forest on a horse at a full gallop and not run into a tree, that would be a picture of a healthy forest.
So you take out the small trees, the dying or sick trees, and brush, leaving large, healthy trees, creating a more healthy forest that has a much better chance of surviving a wildfire. The problem is that there are literally millions of acres of forest in Northern California that need to be thinned. So with limited resources, how do you decide what to focus on?
What we've been doing is working with our partners for our community wildfire protection plan. So we bring together a bunch of partners and then design where do the projects need to take place, where there is the most critical risk to fire danger in the communities. And then we wait for the right grant to come. And if it will fund fuels reduction or watershed health or forest thinning, then we write up a proposal based on what the grant's criteria and limitations are.
We drove up to various sites they wanted to show me, including Camp Kudalink, part of the Paradise Park and Recreation District that was burnt during the campfire.
And we can see this area did burn fairly heavily. Again, the intensity of the flames coming out of the canyon, there was not enough space between the trees to slow that down, and it ran into that area.
The area was severely burnt, with very few trees surviving. But then, just a few hundred yards up the road, you can see a line where suddenly the trees aren't burnt very badly and are expected to survive.
And that's this line on the U.S. Forest Service, where last spring we came in and cleared out the vegetation fuels between these large, healthy trees.
So this road right here is part of that?
That's right. And so now we see these trees have a high survivability from the fire. From the design of the project, we just saw directly next to each other, one area burned very heavily, one area burned much, much less. And that was a direct result of that project.
We got out and looked around. It was around 70% covered with shade, like the prescription called for. And when the campfire came through, it worked as planned. Most of the larger trees survived, and the forest was nice and open. Then we continued a bit further on to a project that started as a timber harvesting operation from Sierra Pacific Industries. Then the Fire Safe Council took over from there.
What we have here was a little bit of more open canopy than what we just saw on the U.S. Forest Service project. They were looking for a 30% canopy closure, whereas ours was a 70% canopy closure.
What that means is that only 30% of the sky was being blocked by the tree canopy, letting in more sunlight than the 70% canopy in the U.S. Forest Service project.
And in this case, that worked very well for the design of the field break to help slow the fire intensity coming directly out of the canyon. They left a lot of oaks. You could see these nice large oaks. So there was a lot of species diversity, a lot of different types of trees. And what we're seeing are a lot of healthy trees that survived the fire.
But with more sunlight reaching the bare soil, undesirable brush and bushes can come back more rapidly and add to the forest fuel load.
The nemesis, this is the Scotch broom plant. This plant can grow in the poorest of soils with the least amount of water, so outcompetes the native vegetation. And here it is on the edge of this great fuels reduction, just waiting to take over.
So while a much more open canopy like this one does help slow a fire down, it can also require more maintenance so certain invasive plants, like the Scotch broom and others, don't come back. This is why a shaded fuel break is the most desirable.
Having these trees here helps shade the area, so not as much stuff wants to grow back as fast because you have a lot of shaded area. But, you know, if there's no trees here, then the brush would take over.
So a shaded fuel break is a break in the ground fuel while keeping the large trees to maintain the high canopy that blocks direct sunlight.
Another part of what you see here is that when they did do the thinning, they brought everything up. They took all the ladder fuels away. The whole design of this is to keep the fire low intensity on the ground, not travel higher up into the trees.
Which helps slow the spread of the fire, attempting to protect the most vulnerable parts of the community, ingress and egress roadways, and just as important, protecting the community's water supply.
We're standing at the bridge of Little Butte Creek on Hupkudlink Road, and the water flows are very high right now, so all this water is going into Paradise Lake. The good news here is the fire did not reach this portion of the watershed, and so the water coming into Paradise Lake doesn't have those concerns of the fire contamination.
The last stop for our tour was the Paradise Pines Property Owners Association in Magalia. Callie, Jim, and I got out of the car into the pouring rain so Jim could show me the Fire Safe Council's nearly finished project, thinning the forest so you can access a beautiful hiking trail that was once hidden in plain sight.
So before, you couldn't tell that there was a trail here. So once they got in, we're able to clean out all the smaller brush and trees and everything. You can actually use the trail, see the trail, and move forward from here now and enjoy it.
Yeah, take a horse down here.
In Magalia, I'm Matt Fidler.
And that's our program for Thursday, March 14th, 2019. After Paradise is produced by Mark Albert, Phil Wilkie, and Tess Vigland. Adam Raguzia composed our theme music. Our engineer is Matt Fidler. Special thanks to Capital Public Radio and KQED. And don't forget, we want to hear your questions. We're currently working on answering questions about what's happening with the water in Del Oro's water district and about FEMA housing. If you have any questions about those specific topics or any others, head to mynspr.org. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, and this is After Paradise from North State Public Radio.